Welcome to Phantom Island, presented by Home Field Apparel.
Steven, if I told you a second round, a high second round NFL draft pick got cut, just straight up cut, let's say 3 weeks after the draft, what would be your sort of like first reaction?
He picked the wrong party to go to.
Okay.
Or he, let's see, DUI.
Okay.
I don't even think I could say injury, right? Because there's like NFLPA protection.
Yeah, right, right.
So I'm going straight off the field.
It would be shocking, right? If you heard that this happened and be like, oh, that's not how that's supposed to work, right?
Yeah. We're talking multiple weapons in a vehicle. Honestly, that might not even do it.
What if like I jumped ahead and it was like, okay, second round draft pick, didn't make the 53 out of training camp.
Ooh, then some scouts are getting fired.
Okay. These are places where you're supposed to.
Second round NFL pick doesn't make the roster like 3 months later?
Yeah. That's a capital P problem, right?
Without injury, right?
Yes.
Okay, and then if we're not talking about some sort of like absolute mental break.
Yeah.
I would say scouts plural and or assistant director of personnel is getting real fired.
The situation I'm describing to you is actually somewhat common in the WNBA. And I want to preface by saying like what we do here on Phantom Island is not necessarily like wag our finger at a thing we think is wrong or offer big solutions based on situations we don't fully understand. But it sticks out to me mostly because it's like, huh, that's unusual. And I want to illustrate that to you through a couple examples from, like, I could have pulled more than these, but I want to tell you, like, how this actually works. Let's start with Abby Meyers, who in the 2023 WNBA draft was drafted 11th overall, first round.
Okay.
Waived during training camp.
Wait, waived, like cut.
Cut during training camp.
Non-injury?
I believe that's the case, yeah. I believe in most of these cases it's non-injury. We're going to get to one that is possibly injury-related.
We're not fighting in the club or...
No, okay. none of these had anything I could find where it was like, oh, a serious crime or problem happened.
The 11th
overall pick in 2023, waived.
Okay, keep going.
2017 draft, Tori Jankowska, who I believe at the time and may still be, is like the all-time leading scorer in Michigan State history. 9th overall, waived after the Chicago Sky's first game, which she didn't play in.
So she was a healthy scratch.
Yes.
And then got cut.
Maya Hollingshead, 8th overall in the 2022 draft.
The 8th overall pick in the first round.
In the first round. In the 2022 draft by the Las Vegas Aces, never played a single game for them, got cut, and has never played for a WNBA team to date.
Okay, rather than make silly jokes, I'll bite here because this level of confusion, like this high of a pick in the first round, and the frequency, this undermines the entire process of the WNBA draft.
It sort of makes you wonder what's going on.
I'm like... I don't get it. Are second rounders making the team?
Second rounders don't make the team that often. Like, it is unusual for a second rounder to, like, stick with the roster.
So let me ask a couple questions. Yeah. Roughly, there are, like, how many players on a WNBA roster?
I can tell you this for certain. The current and this is where we're going to start and get into the, like, why does this happen?
How does this work? Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to build this out in my head. But if I'm listening, so how many people are sitting on the bench?
The WNBA has a current roster max of 12 players. But you can actually go down to 11 players.
Okay.
But let's say it's 12. This season, there are 13 teams in the WNBA. But we just got an expansion team in the Golden State Valkyries. We're going to come back to that in a little bit.
That was my next question.
So if you could say, the math is pretty simple. For most of recent WNBA history, it's 12 by 12. It's 144.
Mm-hmm.
So that's issue number one. Like, when people talk about this, and when people talk about the WNBA in general, and again... This is not my area of expertise, nor is it yours, and we want to put that on the table right away.
Yeah.
Roster size is one of the biggest sort of
It's small.
Complaints, yes.
There's just not a lot of spaces.
No, there's not a lot.
What is the turnover look like? Because in football, which is my professional background, yeah, in covering football, I can tell you, hey, X amount of years you're going to wash out of the NFL, mm-hmm, X amount of players make it to their second contract. Is there a sort of known formula for that in the WNBA? If you have 12 players on a roster,
yeah,
are you just sort of guaranteed to like lose one or two at the end of every season to aging out, retirement, right, or injury, or just injury forced retirement?
I don't know. I actually don't have any numbers on that, and that's a good question. And maybe that's something I'll look up and throw in on our outro.
I'm just trying to figure out like space available.
Yes.
Okay.
The broad consensus from players and fans and analysts is not enough.
No, there's not enough space.
Not enough space. The WNBA, I think the broad consensus is there's more talent than there is available roster space.
Okay.
And something needs to be done about it.
Can I also ask a real stupid question real fast?
You can always ask a stupid question.
I'm filled with them. It's better to learn together than to suffer in silence with your ignorance. I like to put my ignorance right up front. There are 5 players on the floor, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Everything else is sort of normal.
So there's 5 players on the floor.
Yeah.
And 12 per.
And I understand
12 players on a roster.
I understand your confusion because there are special leagues, like summer leagues, basically in the WNBA, where it's not always 5-on-5. But
correct. Sorry, and also, ahead. Like you know, NHL and Olympic hockey are different.
Yes.
You know, like
yes.
Yeah. So I'm just double checking idiot math checks out.
Yes. The WNBA season is shorter than the NBA season, but in most respects, we're talking about 1-to-1.
So if the consensus is that there's more talent than there are available slots.
Yes.
Meaning like there are somewhere out there right now is a WNBA quality basketball player who's not on a WNBA roster.
Yes.
Or several of these women.
Yes, yes.
That doesn't explain to me.
The rookie thing?
Well, how the 11th or 8th overall pick is getting cut because 12 teams or 13 now.
Yeah. Soon to be more. Expansion is continuing.
Yeah. Our backyard here in Nashville,
there's
a bid in.
Would love one.
Can I ask another dumb question?
Of course.
Is the second round on TV?
Yeah, I think everything is televised, if I remember correctly. Why? Yeah. I mean, that's a question for.
Well, I guess the 7th round of the NFL draft is on TV, and those guys aren't. Yeah, okay. That's just inventory and product. Yeah. Okay. But the likelihood of anyone going up on the stage in the 2nd round actually having a WNBA career seems pretty scant.
It is notable. Last season, Kate Martin from Iowa like stuck around and was a meaningful player in the WNBA. She got drafted in the 2nd round, and that was like kind of a big deal.
And she's on our roster.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So a couple of things that I want to like pull apart here. So the roster size we've talked about. The NBA by comparison, NBA certainly has more teams to begin with, but an NBA roster is 15 players, and you can have 3 more players on what's called a two-way contract.
What is the two-way designation?
Basically, it means you have to spend part of your time in the G League. That's another thing that doesn't exist in the WNBA. There is no WNBA G League. There are overseas leagues where players ply their trade, but there is no developmental league within the W as it stands right now.
There's no D League, G League, anything. There's no minors. It's just this.
Correct.
Is that because of money?
I would say, so we're going to, as a little spoiler, the latter part of this episode, I sat down with Marissa and Jemmy to talk about a lot of these questions, and I think her answer and a lot of people's answers would be yes. It's money. It's money. That's why there aren't more roster spots.
Yeah.
That's why, well, there's more that we're going to get into here, but yeah, I think money is an overarching part of a lot of this.
Aside from like the social, political arguments going on about the WNBA, mm-hmm, anything that would be considered partisan in nature. Anecdotally, the only thing that springs to mind right now in this area of topics was that a few years ago, maybe 2, I remember there being a sort of argument about WNBA players not even flying on, like, they were flying commercial.
That argument continues.
So that's still happening. That, like, a WNBA team is, like, catching the Southwest flight
from depends on the team you're
St. Louis to Charlotte.
It depends on the team you're talking about. But that is an ongoing issue. And the other thing that's sort of hovering all of this, the WNBA is in the middle of negotiating its next CBA. Travel is one of the things that's probably going to be addressed in it. Roster size may also be addressed in it. Okay. But I wanted to sort of like zoom this way out and think about like the purpose that rookies serve in other pro sports. And there are a couple key differences that I think contribute to the you can get drafted relatively high and not make a team and maybe never make a team.
Yes.
The first thing that sticks out to me, you sign rookie talent. We'll go back to the NFL, for example. Why do you want a rookie quarterback? Or let me rephrase that. Okay. Why do you want a quarterback on a rookie deal?
Well, you want a quarterback on a rookie deal because, especially now in 2025, we're seeing that position has evolved to where, I don't want to say guys are coming in ready-made, but you're seeing more frequent success on field from quarterbacks at a younger age in the NFL, and a rookie deal is controlled. It's cheap. The shortest answer is like you're getting really good quarterback play for not a lot of money.
Right. The cheap part is key, right? Yeah.
Best player on the field, most important, and then they're still locked into a rookie deal just like any left tackle or corner.
So the highest cap hit this year, according to Spotrac, in the WNBA this year, the highest cap hit is Kelsey Mitchell's, which is just under $250,000.
Okay.
If you are the number one pick in the WNBA draft, which has a similar sort of like tiering system depending on where you get picked.
Yes.
Your first year cap hit is about $80,000. So that to me is problem number one, is there's not actually that much money to be saved on rookie contracts because veterans don't make that much money. That is the thing that may change in the new CBA, but there's not the financial incentive to sort of say like, okay, we have to sort of like maneuver around the cap in these ways. Mm-hmm. If you can sign a veteran for, I don't know, call it $150,000, it's not that valuable to you to have a rookie on the roster.
Unless this rookie is really in a high percentile of talent,
100%.
Like
100%. If you are the number one pick,
yeah.
Number one picks don't get cut. So I want to be very clear.
Okay. So like Paige Buchers is this year's number one pick. She went to Dallas.
Yes.
She played for UConn.
Yes.
And
she's already playing for the team.
Yeah.
Like she's not getting stashed on the bench. There's no question of like, is she going
to
be part?
So the handful of names I can rattle off to you: Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, etc.
Yes.
Like, they're in a separate category.
We're not talking about them.
But that category, but your point is that group's pretty small.
Yeah.
Whereas literally no one in the first round of the NFL draft is expected not to produce this year. It would be unfathomable if one of those picks, non-injury, didn't make the roster. That's just not possible.
Yes, right.
And you better be productive.
Right, 100%. So that's thing one, is that there's no, you can't save that much money paying a rookie instead of a veteran.
I gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Thing two, this is maybe the most important thing. Rookie base salaries aren't guaranteed. So part of why you don't see this happen in other sports is that you sign a deal and, you know, it's like, okay, this high pick signed a 4-year deal for $50 million. $20 million of it is guaranteed, right?
Right, yeah.
So you have not only do you have the incentive of rookie labor is cheaper than veteran labor, you also are on the hook. Like, you kind of got to figure out how to make it work because you have committed a certain amount of money to this person. Rookie salaries, rookie contracts in the WNBA don't work that way at all. When the players we're talking about got cut out of training camp or after the first game of the season, that's it. The team is no longer under any obligation to them financially. Now, they become immediately free agents and can sign with whoever they want, but there isn't, like, this to me is a big reason why you can see somebody get drafted, you know, top in the top 20 picks, and within weeks they're shown the door because there is no formal relationship that binds them to their team.
Are the case studies that you mentioned at the top,
yeah,
did did they just wash out, if you will, or did they jump on elsewhere?
It's a mixed bag.
Okay.
I would say it's a mixed bag. But most of these are cases where people just wash out. Like, they end up not playing in the WNBA at all. They maybe, like, catch on for a little bit with another team here and there. It's a lot of – and we're going to get to my main example.
So far, I'm, like, I'm already trying to apply solutions, and I'm thinking, like, well, you can't – you ethically, you wouldn't want to make the rookie deals cheaper.
Sure.
You could force them to be guaranteed, I guess, but that's actually a way of increasing cost on a league that's trying to mind its costs.
Right, and I think if you're a responsible players association, you'd say, like, wait a second, we don't have enough spots. Why are you taking away, like, spots that could go to veterans who can still play in the league for unproven rookies?
The argument, though, would then push in the direction of, well, eventually you're going to run out of veterans. If you don't train up the next round of labor, if this trend continues, or we see an increase in this, well, then you're taking away your future pool.
I think the argument, at least right now, would be the ratio of spots to available talent has eliminated that from becoming a problem. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if I believe it or not.
So if we're talking about a 20-team WNBA, do you think we're making this episode?
I think the prevalence of it is far, far less. Yeah, I think it's far less. And that is one thing I talked to because
we started this and you said it's 12 by 12, basically.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. Now it's 13 by 12, but, you know, that's not a huge number.
Okay. So 13 by 12 is still 156 working professional women's basketball players.
Yes.
And then I said a 20-team league just sort of randomly. That's 240.
Yeah.
So is that the delta?
I don't know. It's a good question. And there are, I think, other reasons why people want the league to expand at this point. But the talent crunch is one of them. There's one more thing that I think plays into why you see this in the WNBA more than other sports.
Okay.
The WNBA draft takes place not long after the end of the women's college tournament. It is 2 weeks before training camp starts. And it is a month before the season starts. It is an incredibly compressed calendar to onboard someone, figure out if they're going to be a contributor, get them familiar with your system, and start the season.
You know what I'm going to ask?
Yeah.
Why?
It's just because of when the WNBA calendar falls.
But the WNBA calendar, if I'm not mistaken, when it was created, fell because it was trying to fill a gap when NBA basketball is not being played.
Yes, that's a big part of it.
But that doesn't best serve the WNBA.
That's a big question, isn't it? I mean, like, some of this is a logistics question. A lot of WNBA teams play in NBA arenas, so there's, like, a space question there. It's a television question, I suspect.
But I don't know if there's a single – but there's no sport in which that timeline that you just laid out seems smart.
Not one that doesn't also have a robust developmental league, I wouldn't say. Like, I think you can make this work in baseball or hockey because you do have...
Oh, well, yeah, because the pitcher's not... But if you draft a pitcher in the first round, he's not going to go to the MLB team on that schedule.
In 3 weeks, right, yeah.
Yes, to your point, Major League Baseball has a really jacked up schedule because kids are getting drafted, or at least they were until recently, like during the NCAA postseason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kids were getting drafted.
Yeah.
And then you want to talk about a distraction, a real one. But the top pitching prospect for any team is then going to go into the minor league development system, mm-hmm. or hitter, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But what you lined up was, and I'll change the sport. Let's not make it football for a second.
Okay.
I'm trying to think, like, if you did baseball or hockey and a kid plays in the NCAA postseason.
Yeah, plays in the College World Series.
It can't work in college because they're overlapping. But, like,
right.
You're in the Frozen Four. You're a top prospect. You have been scouted throughout your collegiate career, obviously. But then you go through the entire draft process. And if you're listening to this and you only are just, like, a casual football fan, think about how long the freaking draft process is.
Yeah.
Right? Campus pro days, combine, team meetings, all of that stuff before you get to the NFL draft. But you're doing all that in, like, what did you say, 2 weeks as a hockey player?
Yeah.
Then you get drafted. Then it's 2 more weeks before you're expected to then go play for, like, the Buffalo Sabres?
Yeah. So
that would never happen.
The comparison is this. The NBA draft happens a month before Summer League happens. Summer League is definitely geared towards new talent.
And there's a Summer League.
Yes. It's nearly 3 months before training camp, and it's about 4 months before the season starts. So even with all the sort of structural reasons why NBA teams would want to keep rookies on the roster, there's a lot more time to figure out, is this going to work? How is this going to work? What do we need to have you work on? And in the WNBA, which, as we said, has a shorter season, I think there is more pressure to be like, this has to work now. Like, you either mesh with what we're doing and you're a contributor now. Like, we don't have the space to develop you. We don't have either the roster spots, the time, the pressure, the absence of pressure to sort of say, like, yeah, you can just sort of, like, sit and learn if you're a rookie. We need you to be a contributor.
Okay, let's pause for just a sec for a message from the sponsor of Phantom Island. It's graduation season, and do you know what high school and college grads want more than any other gift? Normally, I would say US dollars, but, well, look at all that economic fluctuation out there. Who knows how much your check will be worth by the time that new diploma holder gets around to cashing it? That's why I am instead declaring the best grad gift to be any item from the fine folks at homefieldapparel.com, proud sponsors of the whole family of Phantom Island shows. High school graduate heading off to college in the fall? Why not get them a pullover or hoodie to keep them warm and fashionable during freshman year? College graduate venturing out into the world? Arm them with stylish and high-quality shirts or hats to declare their alma mater to all they encounter. And, unlike the U.S. dollar, I personally guarantee that home field apparel products will never lose value against the euro or any other currency, mostly because you cannot exchange a sweatshirt for paper money at the airport. I have tried.
Okay, so far the why has not been answered here, other than that's just the way the WNBA has been set up.
Yes. I think. And I don't know if the why can be answered here because I don't know that this was something that was intentionally done to sort of like get us into this direction.
Great.
But it is where we are.
Got another dumb question.
Yeah, of course.
Why the WNBA is expected to expand?
Yes, already is expanding to two more cities. And I think there will be a third in the mix there, though they haven't identified.
WNBA is in the middle of a new CBA.
Yep.
Television is up.
Yep.
Attendance is up.
Yep.
Merchandise is up.
Yep.
So this is a growing league. Very much so. What I'm about to ask isn't applicable, but this has been posed in other sports. Maybe the draft. Like, why not do a draft?
Like I believe it's NWSL did away with a draft. Sure.
Okay, so how many rounds are in the WNBA draft?
Three.
So three times the current 13 teams.
Yeah.
39 new players.
Yeah.
And you're telling me that most second rounders aren't making that roster.
Sure. So, third rounders don't fare that well.
And we started the show by you telling me about the 11th and 8th overall picks getting cut.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds like a draft is not a good idea. Until maybe there's just more, and until maybe a dev lead exists. Don't ask me how to fund that. I don't know. Like, I'm just throwing this out. And or we have like 20 teams.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Actually, you know what? I keep saying
you've expansion, caught me on my back foot here because I hadn't thought about like we'll just get rid of the draft.
But expansion is not the answer. It's actually roster increase.
Well, I think expansion is that's I think the thing that people go back and forth on is. If you're the owners, expansion is roster increase that you favor because it costs money to get a new team.
Yeah, but
it doesn't impact if I own the Liberty, for one example, an expansion team doesn't increase my labor costs.
Mm-hmm.
But an increased roster does. Now I have, even if it's just one more player, it's like, okay, there's another $150,000, $200,000 I have to come up with.
But we're still going to have the problem of cutting most of the draft picks if there's only 12 spots per team. That's going to persist even if there's 20 teams.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
Because if I'm the Dallas Wings,
I don't care if five new teams pop up. I'm still going to have maybe the space allotted for like one new player, maybe one and a half new players. Mm-hmm. So we're going to run into this problem. Now, It would answer the first thing that we talked about, which is the consensus that there's actually more available talent than there are slots for women's professional basketball.
Right. I want to tell you about the example that made this stick out to me, or sort of reminded me that this was a thing I find interesting. This is the story of Cheyenne Sellers, who just got drafted in the second round this year in the 2025 NBA draft. She was selected by Golden State Valkyries, who are an expansion team, who don't have an existing, like, this is who we are, this is what we're trying to build.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said expansion team.
Yeah.
My sports brain says they must have had an expansion draft. Did they?
Yes. In fact, there was an expansion draft where the Valkyries got to sort of like build out their initial roster, where they were able to pick 12 teams if they wanted to, 12 mm-hmm. players rather, if they wanted to.
Yeah, I remember the Las Vegas NHL expansion draft.
Yes,
protected players, unprotected players.
Same thing, very similar.
Yeah,
thing.
I remember the player that Nashville lost.
Yeah. So Cheyenne Sellers came in and was picked 17th overall, but in pre-draft rankings was somebody that people thought would be a first rounder, potentially was maybe potentially going to be who the Valkyries used their first round pick on.
So she
fell to the second round, and as I get into with Marissa in this interview, like, that was seen as something of a coup. That was like, oh, this is great, the Valkyries have potentially gotten a first rounder in the second round, that's ideal. Within a couple of weeks, Cheyenne Sellers was waived. Like, waived during training camp, didn't play in a preseason game, went to the Atlanta Dream, quickly waived there as well. Now, there is an injury component to this. Like, okay. Part of why she fell and part of why she hasn't found a team, at least as of this recording, is because she has a knee injury that people are sort of like, how bad is this? Is she ever, okay. Is okay. this going to work?
Yeah. Very common NFL storyline. Very common NBA storyline and drafts, yeah.
But I what sticks out to me is that, like, when you're building an expansion team, it feels like part of what you try to do is hit on rookies that A, will play well, and B, like, that's how you're building kind of excitement with your local crowd. You're sort of saying, like, okay, yeah. These are like the first members that are like truly our players. You've never seen them in any other jersey. Like, they sort of get to represent the city. And Cheyenne Sellers had a great career at Maryland, was like all Big Ten team, I think, all 4 years of college. Definitely talented player. This was not the case of like, oh, this is somebody who like played one season in college, we're not really sure like what she's going to look like. No, none of that. The other thing I should tell you, you can't, if you're a college player, you can't enter the WNBA draft until basically you've completed 4 years of college. There's no one and done here. For these rookies that we're talking about. European rookies are a slightly different thing. Anyway, again, I don't have any answers here, but I just think it's interesting. That is why I decided to sit down with Marissa and Jemmy of the San Francisco Chronicle, who's covering the Valkyries in their first season, and throw some of these questions at her, because Steven and I are not experts on this.
No, I'm an idiot.
So we'd like to see what the experts have to say instead.
Hi, I'm Marissa Njemi. I'm the women's sports reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, covering the Golden State Valkyries inaugural season and the WNBA. I also cover the NWSL and college sports, but we're in the midst of Valkyrie season.
So I want to start by talking about Cheyenne Sellers, and I'm going to use that to sort of talk about a larger topic. I want you to take me back, if you can, to April 14th, when the Valkyries drafted Cheyenne Sellers in the second round. What was sort of the reaction to that pick? Like, how did people feel about that selection?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people expected Sellers to be a first-round pick. I think some people even expected the Valkyries to be interested in her at number 5 overall in the first round. So as she kept dropping and dropping, I think a lot of the assumption was, oh, it's a knee injury she sustained during college season. Maybe that was giving some red flags to people. And then the Valkyries ended up with the number 17 pick in the second round, and they took Sellers. And I mean, I think the reaction was like, oh, that's a steal, because we all assumed she would have been a first round pick. And then after the draft, actually, I asked the GM, Ohem and Ayana, and like, were you surprised that Cheyenne was still available? And she said, yeah, we were surprised and we were thrilled. So I think at the time, a lot of people thought she would be in contention to make the team as a player who can play positions 1 through 4. She has a lot of versatility, obviously had a great college career at Maryland. But in retrospect, maybe dropping to that second round in the first place was potentially a red flag.
And then
3 weeks later, just about, the Valkyries cut her, wave her. What's the reaction like at that point in time?
Hey, people were surprised. It was tough for us because we only get to see the final 30 minutes of practice covering them. So we weren't seeing that much intensity, mostly just like shooting threes and stuff at the end. So like people kept asking, like, how did she look? And it was like, I don't know. We really didn't get to see what she looked like. But people were surprised. I don't think that she got cut. Like, second rounders get cut all the time. It was very competitive to make this roster. And at the end of the day, they wanted some size. And that's why Kiara Linskins ended up making that final roster spot. And Leticia Amihir was in contention for that. So like, all along, I was kind of like 50-50, maybe sellers makes it depending on what they want. So I wasn't surprised she got cut. But I think it was that it was so quickly and that she was the first cut that really took people aback. And again, hindsight's 20/20. We saw her play in the game for Atlanta and she did not look ready. And maybe it was a knee injury. Maybe it's such a competitive, tough league to make. And it's tough. Like, a head coach, Natalie Nicasi, has said a lot of times they should have more roster spots, and they really should. That's kind of been a debate in the WNBA for a long time. I don't know if Sellers would have made the team if there were more roster spots or not, but I do think it was a learning experience for a new franchise of just, like, how the fan base is going to react, how the media is going to react, and just how optically some things are going to look.
And you sort of alluded to this. The Valkyries are not the first team that has cut a player who they've used, you know, a relatively high draft pick on. We've seen first round picks who, like mid round first round picks who end up not sticking with the team that drafted them almost immediately. We've seen other sort of like high second round picks that this has happened to. Is there any sort of sense, either for the Valkyries or just generally when this happens in the WNBA, is there any sort of sense of missed opportunity of like, oh, we had this draft spot and we use it on somebody that, you know, within a month was no longer part of a team? Or is this just how the league works at this point in time?
It's just kind of how the league works. It's so tough. I mean, last year, only 4 second round picks made opening day WNBA rosters. Like, the expectation is kind of like, you're not going to make it. One of the reasons Kate Martin was so appealing to fans is that she was a surprise second round pick who made the Las Vegas Aces, and nobody expected that. It's tough. I mean, it's one of the big reasons that with the number 5 pick, the Valkyries took Eustachijus Sait, who is a Lithuanian guard who's not even joining the team this year, but they have her rights and she can come in next year. And a lot of people question that pick, but the draft and stash approach kind of works when you have, I mean, this is a team that I don't think anyone expects to make the playoffs, but they want to have as much of a veteran presence as possible. They want to be as competitive as possible and not be a 4-30 2008 Atlanta Dream. So they have a lot of players on this team who do have that kind of experience, and I'm not sure that any of the rookies available early in the first round or where they were picking number 5 would have made this team, just the way that it's structured and the way the needs that they have. So I thought that was a smart first round pick. And then, I mean, I think a lot of teams in the league view it this way. Second and third round picks are kind of gravy. If one of them makes it, that's awesome. But like, I don't think that any point in time they were expecting that. I think they structured their rosters very intentionally to have the size that they have on the team right now. And Sellers and Chen, Caitlin Chen, who they took in the third round, didn't really fit that bill. And now again, NBA teams get 15 roster spots. WNBA right. teams have 12. There's only 156 spots in the league. It's the most competitive league in the country to make at the professional level. There need to be more spots, like, in general. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a problem when some of your biggest names in the league is, like, Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark, and these names coming out of college. And other than that, like, some of the names in college we know the most aren't even getting a chance. Like, Caitlin Chen has a whole horde of fans who are so upset she got cut. And it was like, of course she was getting cut. She's a third round pick. She's an undersized guard. She was not going to make this team. But people are so surprised and upset about it because she's a name that they know. So it's kind of a problem for this league, but at the same time, it's also reality. It's professional sports. Players don't make teams all the time.
So the roster spots are the thing. I think that's the thing that most people, media fans, people in the league, point to and sort of say, like, either through some combination of expanding the roster max or and or expanding the number of teams in the league, we got to have more spots. Do you think, though, and this is just your opinion that I want to look at here, if the league did in fact say, okay, we're going to add one roster spot. We're going to go up to 13, and you know, we have these expansion teams coming in the next couple of years, and that's going to sort of build this out. Do you think that would like meaningfully change how easily the sort of not sure thing rookies stick with teams and sort of get the developmental opportunity to grow in the league, or would those spots go to other people, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do. And the WNBA is so tough. I do think those spots would go to veteran players. So, like, let's say the Valkyries had one more spot. I think they would have kept Ami Herrick, because she had a strong camp. She's played in the Olympics with Canada. She was a part of the Dream a couple of years ago. Like, I don't think Sellers or Chen would have been the second or third players cut. Like, I think they were pretty definitively, like, the first and second. And that's kind of how it goes. I do think a developmental league, like the equivalent of the NBA G League, would be wonderful. I'm not sure that infrastructure exists, seeing as like the WNBA is just barely getting like charter flights and things like that during the boom that is undergone. We'll see. Maybe that's something that's negotiated into CBA next offseason. I think that's going to be a real important inflection point for a lot of things in this league, and maybe roster spots are a part of that. Like you said, like having expansion teams helps. Toronto and Portland are coming in next year. That's 24 more spots. There's allegedly a fourth team coming in at some point at a location TBD. That's 12 more spots, so you're going to have 36 more spots in the league. But, I mean, again, at the end of the day, a roster is comprised of what a team feels is best for them. And sometimes that's a young team. Sometimes that's a team under the salary cap. Sometimes it's a team of veterans. It really depends on who's available. One of the hardest things is that injuries count on your roster and your salary cap. So if a player gets hurt, like you look, for example, Samuelson in Seattle tore her ACL. She's out for the year. Now, for the rest of the year, the Storm are going to be dealing with a short roster and salary cap issues. Things like that just make it really tough to bring in a rookie when you already are kind of under the gun, having fewer spots. It helps as far as like being affordable under the salary cap and everything. But when you're trying to replace a veteran, there's just a lot to consider that I think sometimes fans aren't aware of. And they're like, oh, my fave got cut. How dare they? It's like there's a lot going on.
and I think part of what sticks out to me when you look at the WNBA versus the NBA, and there are a million differences, and at the beginning of this episode, I've sort of walked my my co-host through them. One that sticks out to me is that the length of time that all of this happens within the WNBA, between when the draft is, when training camp starts, when the preseason starts, when the regular season starts, we're talking about like a very compressed timeline. Mm-hmm. So there's not necessarily a lot of opportunity. It feels like to me, at least, there's not a lot of opportunity to sort of say like, okay, Women's March Madness is over. Here is the window in which sort of like this process can take place. And it feels like that kind of puts everybody in, let's call it like a sink or swim period pretty quickly, where NBA rookies, you know, might have summer league or might have other opportunities to sort of like figure out what it looks like at the next level and sort of have a little bit more development grace. It feels like that's not really the case in the WNBA, that like by the time we get to preseason, teams need to sort of be making hard choices of like, look, you might turn into a good player in 2 to 3 years, but we just don't have the time or the opportunity for you to do that right now. Do you think like the calendar is sort of creating some of this cutthroat behavior, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, when you're the Valkyries and you're a brand new team and none of you have played together and you have 2.5 weeks and 2 preseason games, and in each of those games, your 2 top bench forwards are injured, so you don't really get a sense of like what this team's actually going to be. I mean, using Chen as an example, she just won a national championship with UConn. 1 week later was drafted. A week and a half or so after that, she's at training camp, and then she's cut. Like, that's a really tough period. I think the key is to have some sort of a developmental league or something, but like the timing, I don't know how you fix that. The WNBA season starts when it starts. I don't think they can change that much more than they already do. They've pushed it back a lot for the European players as it is so that they can come over. The college season ends when it ends. It's just kind of a disadvantage, and having like the ability to be like, okay, we're going to draft this player and she'll be at training camp. And if she doesn't make it, like you look at like something like NHL training camp where you draft a player, they don't make it, they go play in the AHL or whatever. There's not this pressure of you have to make this team right now or you're done. Like, we don't have your rights anymore, because I'm sure the Valkyries would love to have the rights to someone like Caitlin Chen available for when a bunch of their players go to Eurobasket in June. They'd love to have someone like that on call. But when you waive someone, they're gone. They can just go to another team. The Valkyries waived Sellers, and she went to Atlanta. That was it. And now she's waived by Atlanta. Like, who knows what's going on? I'm not sure what a solution is other than to have, like, some sort of protected roster, practice roster, something like that. They don't want to pay people. That's what it really comes down to. But we'll see if in the CBA that gets negotiated, because I know this does matter to the players.
I'm also curious what you think about another sort of theory of mine. You know, a lot, because NBA eligibility is very different from WNBA eligibility for U.S. college players, at least. Is there some sense of like, well, look, you've gone through 4 years of college, so we kind of have a sense of what your developmental ceiling is going to be. Whereas in the NBA, there's a little bit more like, okay, you played 1 year of college ball, and so we understand that you have physical development to go through, mental, like there's more of a sense of like, we know we're getting an unfinished product. Do you think WNBA coaches and front offices sort of look at it and say like, most of what we're getting is closer to a finished product than the NBA counterparts might be?
I don't think so. Just because the WNBA is so competitive and so good, everyone is the best player who was on their college team for the most part. Like,
right.
I think they recognize that, like, even like if you're someone like Caitlin Chen, you're starting for UConn, you're playing against good players and other teams, but all of a sudden you're playing against the best player on every team. I think everyone recognizes that's a tough leap to make and is not going to happen overnight. I know teams wish they had these spots. They wish they had the opportunity to develop people. They wish they could have practice players. Nikasa has said as much a lot during training camp and the start of the regular season. But I don't think teams are looking at rookies as like, oh, you should be more prepared. I think they recognize, like, especially in the women's game, like there is some disparity at the top. Like if you're a Cheyenne Sellers, you're playing for Maryland, you're playing against Big Ten teams. It's different than, I mean, even some of these, like, European players coming over and dominating over in Europe. But, like, it's just, like, there's a lot of, every draft pick is different. Every college player is different. I think teams select based, it's hard to take positionally in this league. So I think a lot of the time they take, like, who has the most upside, who is available. And I think the Valkyries did that, and they took three guards in their draft, even though they have plenty of guards, because those, I think they took players who they thought had the most upside to make the team. And I think in a perfect world, they would have loved to have kept those players as a part of the organization. But when you have 12 spots and you're an undersized team and you're a brand new team and you need to build chemistry all of a sudden, and you have some players who have played together in Europe or unrivaled or whatever, like, it's just kind of the choice that has to be made.
You mentioned the upcoming new CBA that's going to be, we're sort of in the early stages of negotiating. There is so much that has to be hashed out in that. Do you get a sense that sort of rookie status or sort of changing the sort of like revolving door that can be being a WNBA rookie, is that important for either side right now to sort of hash out in the CBA, or are there such a list of like, yeah, we have some really big structural things that we need to figure out that this may fall by the wayside and may just end up being kind of the same even once we enter the new CBA?
I think players view the lack of roster spots as a big structural issue. Like, I think this does matter to them. Last year when the Valkyries were announced as an expansion team, players were like, good, it's 12 more spots, but we need more spots on the teams. Like, I remember talking to Chelsea Gray specifically on the Las Vegas Aces about, like, what do you think of an expansion team at the All-Star Game in Phoenix last year? And she was like, that's fine, but I think we need more stuff for the current players before we even worry about an expansion team and everything that comes with that. I think it will matter to the players to try to get some expansion of roster spots. I wouldn't be surprised if they go up to 13, but again, it all comes down to they don't want to pay people, just like any CBA labor negotiation ever. But it does matter to the players, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's a really big talking point for them.
You know, we're very early into the first season of the Valkyries, first expansion team we've had in a little bit in the WNBA. What has most surprised you about this team in its early stages as it sort of gotten to take the floor and actually play meaningful action
in this season?
It's a good question. I've covered a lot of expansion teams in a lot of sports. I covered the Seattle Kraken in the NHL in their first year. I covered Bay FC in their first NWSL season last year. So I feel like I have a really strong sense of like what it feels like around an expansion team, which is them all being really excited and then also very cautiously being like, well, if we don't win, it takes time. Like, don't worry about it. And it's been like very similar. It's been interesting to see the fan base, how they've reacted to stuff, because I remember covering the Kraken in the NHL and people were like kind of understanding and like happy to have a team and like it's all fine. And then last year, Bay FC, they ended up making the playoffs actually, but they were really bad early in the year and it was the same. Valkyries fans have like expectations and they have feelings about stuff and they're mad about stuff. They want to bench people after the first game. And I'm just kind of like a little surprised, especially because like, I'm from Boston. Where I'm from, everyone's mad about everything. And out here in the Bay, everything has been like really chill. Like, oh, the Giants aren't that good. That's fine. Like, oh, the 49ers lost a Super Bowl. I'm happy we got there. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of passion too, but like, it's just much more of a chill vibe. So to see Valkyries fans kind of bring that intensity has been really nice. I've really enjoyed it. That's one thing that I've talked to a lot of. I'm not sure that answers like fully everything you're asking here, but like that's something that I've talked to a lot of people about the last few days is like the Valkyries fans are bringing the heat. They have a lot of feelings about stuff. The Facebook groups are really mad. And I just think that's fun and interesting and not what I expected.
I said I would follow up with Godfrey's question about WNBA career lifespans at the end of this episode, and I am paying off that promise now. Most estimates have the average WNBA career lasting 3.5 to 5 years. The NBA numbers for comparison that I've seen are right around 4.8. Thanks again to Marissa for lending us her expertise, and be sure to follow her work at the San Francisco Chronicle. And just because I feel like shouting them out, go check out Flagrant Magazine if you want more cool and interesting basketball content. You can find them at flagrantmag.com.